Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Scott Stemmen Podcast. Today, we are going to have a very interesting episode of a very interesting topic, a topic that, especially if you are a pastor, and you may be a pastor who may be, quietly struggling with something, and you're not admitting to it, or you don't have anybody that you are accountable with, this would probably be the episode to listen to. But before we dive right in, let me introduce my co-host, Micah Current. Micah, how are you, man?
I'm good. I think we should change the name of the podcast.
What should it be?
The He Is Risen podcast.
The He Is Risen podcast. Oh,
you inspired me so much that I got a shirt just like you did.
I like the Jesus and the Dinosaur one because for the longest time.
Oh, I did sing you that one.
For the longest time, when MySpace was a thing, my profile picture was Jesus riding a brontosaurus, and that was my profile picture. And the funny thing is I cannot find that picture, like that specific picture. I can't find it anywhere because it was on my old computer that crashed, so I lost everything. I think the hard part about the stress of Easter, the stress and the work of Easter week is after Easter sometimes can become just as, I don't know, I feel like I'm not relaxed. I feel like, you know, it's like almost like once Easter's over and all that work you put in is done and you've had that great Easter service and you can kind of take a week to relax. I just felt like I never finally got there because we had immediately right after Easter, we had a big event. We had the VA come to our church for a memorial service to honor like the people who died at the VA hospitals for the last 6 months. So there's like 450 people in attendance, had a family game night, had a combined service where we did a chili cook-off afterwards, which apparently Laura and I either tied or we won. And I'm not sure because I had to leave because I had to pray at the Eagle Scouts Court of Honor ceremony in town. I was asked to do that. So I've just been going nonstop since after Easter. And then we had WrestleMania Saturday and Sunday. And oh my goodness, like that was a fun show. There's some matches I could care less for. And then there's other matches that were absolutely phenomenal. It was great. So,
well, not that people care about wrestling. What was your favorite? And I'll tell you mine. We could do that instead of Stories Gone Wild. What was your favorite WrestleMania match and why?
Yeah, let's do that because we don't really get to talk. Well, we do talk about wrestling on this show, but we don't get into much detail. I think that's a good question. My favorite one? Oh, it's hard. Like, I really enjoyed the Sami Zayn and Gunther match.
Okay.
I really like that one. And I think a lot of it has to go with just if you've been following the whole Sami Zayn storyline from the Bloodline, when he was part of the Bloodline, to now, it's almost like, okay, he finally got his championship. I almost liked the Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins because it was quick and there were so many things that were just so unexpected in that match. Like right at the ring of the bell, hitting Seth with a claymore and trying to pin him. Like I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if this ends right now, crazy. And then plus, you know, adding kind of the beef with CM Punk in there too, just kind of added that. And then of course the cash in, and finally the Money in the Bank cashman from Damian Priest. It just seemed like I think I like that match for a whole different reason than I like the Sami one, just because there were so many twists and turns through that just made that match exciting.
Yeah, I think the drama of like the story they've told with Drew McIntyre kind of trolling CM Punk on social media and the fact that he was at ringside, you know, for commentary. And Drew finally wins the title in front of a crowd and he gets in Punk's face and Punk's not going to hit him. He's just sitting there. He's taking it. And he's just like, Drew's just like getting so obnoxious and in his face. And he was like, watch me as the world champion when you couldn't do it yourself because you couldn't, you know. He's like, I'm gonna end your career or something like that, or I'll end you. Or and he stood up and Punk just tripped him and knocked him off the table. And then he hit him once or whatever. And a couple of friends that were at my house last night were watching it and were like, is Punk cleared to wrestle? And apparently, well, Drew never hit him. So, like, you know, and then the music hit, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. They finally give Drew McIntyre his moment, and he loses. And so
But I feel like
it's,
that's going to set up for another good storyline. I really
yes.
think that's going to, I mean, and I think that's kind
Or,
of what makes it, I think that's probably why I like that match, because like, oh, it's going to set up for another good storyline. And especially since they're doing Clash at the Castle in Scotland in a
yeah.
couple months. So that's going to be, so I think even in that, that's kind of a build up to there.
They could, like, Drew could win the title back tonight on Raw. Who knows? Like, I mean, they could do that just to get, you know, Damian the cash in done and all that fun stuff. And then they could have a title match between Punk and Drew down the road, maybe a Clash Castle. My favorite match, I mean, it feels like it'd be too easy to say the Roman and Cody match from last night, but I think my favorite wrestling match was probably Becky and Rhea.
That was a good one too, and that's the
I
one I
think that was
missed.
probably the best wrestling match on the entire Tonight Show. Like, and I felt too, like best match wise, like it was just a solid wrestling match, and it was really like they did a good job building that story, but like I feel like everybody was watching WrestleMania just to see if Cody was going to win. Right. And so, like, nothing else really mattered, even though it did, if that makes sense. So, I feel like The Rock, as two guys, you and me, who grew up during the 90s and the Attitude Era, like, we saw The Rock in his prime. I just felt like The Rock was having a midlife crisis. I just, like, wrestling wise, he just, like, we were making fun of how long it took him to get to the ring on Saturday. We timed it. It was like 5 minutes and 27 seconds or something that it took him to get to the ring. So yeah,
Goodness.
I'm glad it's over. I always call the Monday after WrestleMania the Mania hangover day, because, you know, they've got Friday Night SmackDown, the Hall of Fame, WrestleMania Saturday, WrestleMania Sunday, and then there's Monday Night Raw, and then there's NXT on Tuesday. Scott, when we were kids, we would dream about having this much wrestling on TV.
I
Now
mean,
it's like
we were
just.
happy with just Monday nights flipping back between WCW and WWE.
And now there's not enough time in the day to watch all the shows that are out there.
What was your worst match? Since we're still on this WrestleMania, what was the worst match?
That's a great question. Wrestling wise,
And whatever you think is your worst match.
it was probably the six-man tag with Authors of Pain and
Bobby Lashley and the
yeah,
Street
Bobby
Profits.
Lashley, Street Profits, and what's his Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross and
Karrion
Authors of Pain, they
Kross.
have a new name for their group, and then Street Profits and Bobby Lashley, like that.
That
Was
match,
just was a mess.
it was like, I mean, the fact that they had to bring out a special guest referee, which was Bubba Ray
Bubba
Dudley, to
Ray
do that
Dudley.
match. I mean, even Bubba Ray couldn't even save that match. It was just, I don't know. Like that, I mean, originally I was going to say worst match, especially if I'm looking at night one. I mean, I thought the tag team ladder match was interesting. And I almost kind of liked how, because I thought usually it was like, oh, they're going to combine the titles. So whoever, because again, I haven't been keeping up with it for a while. So I thought like, oh, someone can grab both belts and we're going to have like the undisputed tag team champions. But now it's like, oh, it makes sense that they can like, oh, one team can get it, another team can get it. So that actually, I thought that aspect was interesting. And there were some good spots, but I just felt like sometimes when you have too much people going on, it's hard to tell a story when you just have too many people in the ring at the same time. So then it only becomes more spot heavy than necessarily telling a story through wrestling. But then the Bobby Lashley and Karrion Kross match came on. I'm like, oh, this is trash.
Oh,
This is
and like what
garbage.
a fall. Like what a fall from grace like Bobby Lashley has had. Like from the pandemic era of the Thunderdome being world champion with the Hurt Business and like being so dominant to like he's in this mixed person tag match and it was just a big mess and he just doesn't feel like he's as big of a deal as he was.
Yeah.
So
All right.
speaking of falls of grace, falls from grace, let's talk about some.
Jeez. Yeah. So on today's topic, we're actually going to be talking about, so some news broke about a couple days ago about TD Jakes, how he is in a lawsuit being accused of sexual exploitation and sex trafficking. Now, this news may be shocking if you were able to see it. If you're able to see it like a couple days ago when some information was coming out. But one of the things that we have to kind of look back is this news broke all the way back in December. And apparently the story goes is that there's an investigation with Sean Diddy Combs, which most people, if you don't know, the Department of Homeland Security is looking for Sean Diddy Combs for sex trafficking. Apparently, there was a lawsuit that involved a R&B singer who used to work with Sean Combs, accusing him of rape and physical abuse over the years. In the lawsuit, they said that she met Combs when she was 19, and then she was in a controlling and abusive relationship where he would give her drugs, beat her, and forced her to have sex with multiple prostitutes as he filmed it. And then in this, would always host like these sex parties and like these lavish hotels. But one of the things, because this woman ended up grabbing a burner phone that used to belong to Kim Porter, who was a late model and mother of Diddy's children who passed away in 2018. She also has a USB device that can retain recordings of these parties that Diddy was having. And it, on the video, there was a bunch of powerful people in these videos, including Mr. TD Jakes. And a lot of these were happening because even a bunch of male escorts who were part of these parties said that he was at parties that JD Aches was acting upon them, especially as young as 16 years old. Just these things. However, the public relations director at TD Jakes Ministry in the Potter House says that this report is false and baseless. And even TD Jakes himself, this is back in December of 2023, said this on a Christmas Eve sermon. He says that we're gonna not let God take away our service, is gonna go. But then he says it's the worst that could happen if everything was true. All I gotta do is repent sincerely from my heart. There's enough power in the blood to cover all kinds of sin. I don't care what it is, the blood would fix it, but I ain't gotta repent about this. So part of TD Jakes' theology is if I am accused of this, which I'm not saying I am, but all I have to do is just repent, and the blood of Jesus is gonna forgive me of my sins. And that's going to be it. So that was what happened in 2024. Well, now, since then, the government's chasing Sean Diddy Combs. More information is coming out, and some of the information that is coming out is still showing that Jakes is involved in all these crimes that is being posted. However, I don't think they're going to be pressing charges against TD Jakes because, again, they want to find Sean Diddy Combs and get information. But I know they've already raided his house. They had a warrant to raid Diddy's house. So they may have found some stuff in his home that may kind of come out against TD Jakes. It may not, but right now that's kind of what's happening. So here's this big, African American mega church pastor who had great influence for, geez, as far as I can remember. I remember seeing his books in stores, even some books in our church library growing up. So very influential person. And now we are seeing a scandal brewing and a pretty nasty one.
I don't even know where to start. It's just like, it just seems like every single week there's so many. I wouldn't say so many, but like there's a new story or a new investigation or new accusations of pastors and leaders of churches. And it's like, I think before you hit record, Scott, that you mentioned something about like hiding, secret sin and whatnot, and why are people afraid to hide, or why are people afraid to admit to their sin, or go through some reconciliation or whatever. But like, I think the answer to that is purely because, the the repercussions, and a lot of pastors, think that they'll lose their jobs and they'll never be able to serve again, and that's all they know. And the other thing is that, the bigger, some of these, my opinion, it just seems like some of these bigger church leaders feel like they're almost invincible in a way. Like nobody can get to them. I don't know if you feel that way or not.
Yeah, and I think, in some ways, I think that's the true because if you are a pastor that has had a lot of success and you would consider yourself, or people would consider you a mega church pastor, a lot of times when you have a church of over 1,000 people, the structure of how you do ministry is completely different than your mid-sized churches and even your small churches. And I think when something like that happens, it's kind of a hard part because it's such on a grand scale because everybody's going to know who your TD Jakes is. Everybody's going to know who your Bill Hybels is. Everyone's going to know who your Mark Driscolls are. And when you see these pastors who have had not only influence within the Christian community abroad and across different denominations, but even people who don't go to church or people who wouldn't associate with the church or Christianity, they probably know who these people are because they're just big names. Like they'll, oh, this person's offering the prayer for the president dinner or president breakfast or whatever. So, these people are in these positions where they are highly sought after for a lot of different things. And the fact that something like this is coming out, like it almost goes back to when we first, like one of the first scandals we ever talked about was, besides the Hillsong one, was the thing with Matt Chandler and how we're like, what's going on? Like, and we're kind of sitting there going, well, there has to be something more, right? Because this doesn't make sense. Well, I mean, at least this one makes sense. Like, even if it's false and it's baseless, or if it's true, at least we know this is the issue. Here's the sin that's in question. Here's the wrongdoing that's in question. And you're just like, yikes. Like, this is pretty heavy stuff. Like, this is bad news. And it's been interesting because I've been thinking about this, but now we've been seeing a lot more, or at least reading a lot more of the government or Homeland Security really cracking down on a lot of these sex trafficking rings, whether they're associated with a high profile individual or not. And a part of me thinks that probably part of that has to go back to Epstein in that list, and just seeing like, oh, well, now we're going to start investigating these people now, and now we're starting to see. And I mean, in some ways, it's great because, I think a lot of times human trafficking has become such a huge topic, or at least I know, like, the last few years when I was lead pastoring, every February we do like a thing on church on human trafficking, and we talk about certain things. And we even knew that even in our little small city in Virginia, that we knew that there are certain spots where people are trafficking. Like, people kind of know, because this is where usually, because it's a prime spot, you're close to the interstate, so if something can go down and you can, if something goes wrong, you could get the heck out of there, get on the interstate and just start flying, and you're, and that's it. So there's just a lot of human trafficking stuff that's been happening. So now that the government's really cracking down on it, and they have at least a list of everybody who's associated with probably one of the biggest traffickers in the world, like, and again, a lot of powerful people. These aren't just like your crummy, like, slum underbelly people. This is like high profile, very successful people who are doing these crimes. And we're seeing that, even within the church culture, it's happening in that too. And I think TD Jakes, the stuff with TD Jakes is actually, are very, very concerning. It's sad, really. But I think it also goes to the question, like you mentioned earlier, Micah, like, why is it that when pastors are struggling with something in their lives, maybe they're struggling with a sin, why is it hard for them to come clean?
I would say power, giving up that power. Afraid of not being able to hold credentials, not be able to lead churches anymore. I mean, let's just be, and I'm not downplaying the severity of the situations, but like it would also depend on what that is, right? Like if you're having an affair, you're married and you're having an affair. Like with obviously the TD Jakes thing, like it's that's a much grander
Oh, yeah.
set of situations and circumstances, especially with sex trafficking in that conversation. I think that, we have to be careful as leaders and pastors of churches. And I think that we forget that. I think we often forget the reason we're there is to be in community and to really work out, as Scripture says, our salvation. And we've been attending this Baptist church yesterday, and or we've been attending this Baptist church, and yesterday, Pastor Tim started a series in Galatians about the fruit of the Spirit, and he was talking about like there's no way for us to be perfect in the flesh. There's just no way. But if you're living outside the will of God, then you're not covered by his blood. And so it's just there's so many different ways I could go with this, but like it just seems that like my dad always used to say with churches, especially larger churches, that the bigger church, the bigger the church, the larger the fleas or something like that. The bigger the dog, the more fleas or something like that. Scott, you've attended mega churches before. I've attended mega churches before. And it's like, you can't just go up and speak to the lead pastor, right? Like if I came to Bexley and I went to your church on Sunday, I'm probably going to be able to speak to your pastor, right?
Or my
Like,
pastor's probably going to find you and start talking to you immediately, and we'll make that connection.
Yes. And so like there's these layers of like protection, layers of like getting to people, and especially in the African American church, like you see these, what are the group of gentlemen that like kind of surround the pastor?
They're usually like deacons or bishops. That's like the title that they have. Or
Armor bearers.
I think so too. Or yeah.
But like you're never going to be able to get to those people and talk to them. You know what I mean? And so it's like, and why I'm saying that in this illustration is because you don't know what they're doing and you can't get to them if you wanted to. And so it's like,
It's
it's a weird thing. And like, not that I had like a sin issue or an extramarital affair or anything, but when I decided to take a sabbatical from being involved in full-time or part-time ministry like a year ago, like it's hard to give up those responsibilities. It's hard to not want to control everything. It's hard to not want to be, actively involved. And like, yesterday we were in church and they were, the worship had started and music had started, and I looked at Elise and it's like, I really miss leading worship, but I don't miss the stress that goes along with leading folks or having beef with the sound guy or the live stream not working or, but like in the moment a year and a half ago, I was struggling and wrestling with the idea of giving up that leadership. It's like a drug, right? When it's so good, it's good. And when it's so bad, it's bad. And so, another thing in respect to megachurch pastors, I looked up right before we started recording, but TD Jakes is worth like $20 million. So like he's never gonna have to worry about money ever again in his life. So when you have money, it's nice to not have to worry about money. But when you don't have money, it's hard. And so when I say money and power, that's exactly what I mean. I mean, like, what do you think? Like, as far as like the idea of pastors giving up leadership and being caught in scandal, and why are they so afraid to come forth and say, "Hey, I really do struggle too," or "I'm going through this," and
It's
XYZ.
well, I think a lot of it has to do with the I kind of like what you're talking about. It's hard to give up control, and I think there's kind of a pride issue.
I was going to say
And
pride, yeah.
here's the thing, like if I was an accountant and I was caught in some type of, let's say I was just caught in something that wasn't embezzlement, but some type of wrongdoing, and I got fired from like my accounting firm. I could go to any other business. I may not be doing accounting, but I could still go to any other business and do any type of money. I could be a banker, I could be a bank teller, I could do a lot of stuff and still be involved with counting money, doing things. And it's not going to affect my thing, my career. Like it'll affect it a little bit, but I could still find a job that fits with my career. When you think about a minister, if you go to school to go do ministry, and that's all you want to do, you just want to do ministry, and then all of a sudden you're caught in an affair or something happens, and then you're kind of, you not only cannot no longer are you in ministry anymore, but then you're going through a credential committee, and then you may be sus your credentials may be suspended, or your credentials may be revoked. And then all of a sudden, what are you going to do? And I think that's a lot of fear of pastors, because it's like, well, if I'm trained to preach and I'm trained to care and do ministry for people, if I lose that, I don't have anything else to go. I can't go and be the CEO of a company. I can't go and do this because you don't have the skill set. The other thing too is, I think the other thing too is it also has to understand the culture that a pastor creates. I mean, and I know a lot of times, like you mentioned, like sometimes pastors feel like they're on a pedestal or they're invincible. And a lot of times I always struggle, well, is that because that is the expectation of the congregation that they have to have this person that's leading them that is this perfect individual, the spiritually perfect individual that does no wrong, that is leading people to God? So you're kind of like following this perfect Pied Piper as everyone follows that person to have a deep relationship with God? Or is that just the kind of the culture that the pastor puts on themselves? Like you mentioned, you know, sometimes in a lot of African-American churches, there's always like a row of people standing in the front. When I went to a Bishop Clark's church down here in Columbus years ago, I saw the same thing. I didn't know what that was, but it was like, oh, okay. You know, but you had people who stood up there who, as Bishop Clark was preaching, you had people who kind of stood right in front of the stage and were just standing there. Like, it was almost like, I don't want to say henchmen, but it was like their armor bearers. And, you know, they had their culture. But even if you're in a Caucasian heavy church, whether you're small, medium, or large, are you a pastor that kind of puts yourself as, well, I know everything. I'm the pastor. I'm the one who's ordained. I'm the one who has the degree. I'm the one who has all the Bible study skills. And even if you're not saying like, well, I have all this, but you know, like even when I would do Bible study, there's times where I'd have a stack of commentaries right next to me. I'd have my computer with all my digital stuff. So in case if anyone asks a question, I could plug it into my software. I could pull it up and I could say, hey, here's kind of what this person's saying. Here's kind of a good map of how Paul's journey is. Here's this. And I'm just able to quickly pull this stuff up and know a bunch of stuff, which then gives the impression that I'm very knowledgeable about this stuff. So in some ways, maybe people feel like, well, Pastor Scott's so knowledgeable about the Bible and about Jesus and about everything about the Old and New Testament that, you know, we can ask him anything. So in a way, I kind of make myself like the pusher man. You know what? People have a need and I'm able to give it to them because I have the skills. I have the ability. I do the work. And because I create that, then automatically people are automatically depending on you as a leader because you have already set that culture in motion. And I think at the end of that, you know, if you are a pastor who has set up a culture where you are the figurehead of your church, as the person who is leading people, guiding people, and doing all that, and you're the main source, then obviously if you are struggling with something, you don't want to give that up because you don't want to, A, disappoint people. You don't want to let people down. B, you don't want to ruin your lifestyle because even though you're not the CEO of a company, even if you're a small church pastor, you still are in a position of power. So you don't want to lose that power. And plus the idea of, well, what do I, if all this information comes out and the worst case scenario happens, where do I go? What do I do? You know, because I can't go and be a pastor again. I can't go and work in a church again. I can't be in a very high power position anymore. Probably going to be flipping burgers at McDonald's. And that's going to be my career now because my whole life is ruined. So I think that's probably some of the main reasons why I think a lot of pastors don't come clean. It's because their pride, they're afraid of losing their power, or they've created a culture so much where people rely on them that if they do fall,
like they're irreplaceable.
They think they're irreplaceable. And if they do fall, then people are going to be hurt by it. I mean, because think about it, even when a pastor just leaves, even on good terms, if a pastor leaves, people still are hurt by that the pastor has left because there was a relation. And, you know, if the CEO of Disney leaves, if Bob Iger leaves, it's still going to be business as usual. There may be a few people may be sad that he's going, but it's not going to have a ripple effect because Bob Iger, he's a businessman. He's making business decisions. He may have a little bit of relationship with people, but you know, it's not like everyone has access to Bob Iger all the time. It's not like I can go and I can call Bob. If I work at Disney, I can't just call Bob Iger, invite him over to my house for burgers and beers. And the next thing you know, Bob Iger's there in his Hawaiian shirt and shorts having beers and brewskis, and we're sitting there and we're talking about the Orlando Magic. Like, we're not doing that. That's not what Bob Iger's doing. But as a pastor, you are doing that. If people invite you to things, you go because That's kind of what you feel is required or your duty to build those relationships with people. And since ministry is so relationship heavy, even with megachurch pastors, even though T.D. Jakes probably has like a whole list of people and he probably doesn't interact with a lot of people or a lot of people don't have access to him, still, he is very relation. He's still making impacts with his books. People feel like they can connect to him through his writings, through his sermons, through his podcast, even some of the interactions they do have with him. He probably does, like, even if it's short, he probably makes that meaningful because he is such a high celebrity within, you know, church culture that even just the 5 minutes you have to do with T.D. Jakes is almost like having 5 minutes with LeBron James. Like, it's that kind of comparison. I think those are my reasons on why I think pastors don't come clean.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. And I've always thought, especially in leadership, and I've been in, you know, several leadership circles, you know, ministry is a strange thing. Right. And so, like, I was always taught and always believed that you want to work yourself out of a job and raise up leaders. And what I mean by that is that, like, if you were gone tomorrow, if you died tomorrow, if you left the ministry assignment that you were at tomorrow, like, you did a great job, you know, a really good job of just raising up leadership so that, mm-hmm. like, if you left tomorrow or got hit by a bus, the church is going to be okay without you.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be the other way around where you want things to be so interwoven with everything that you say and do that the church can't survive without you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting point. There was a church that I was candidating at years ago, like before I even got my first pastorate. And I remember just talking, having an interview with these people. And one of the things I remember they said is that, you know, their dad was the, and again, this was a board that was like very highly nepotism. So we'll just throw that in there. So like almost everybody on this board was on the search committee was related to the pastor who passed away, you know, years ago. And one of the things they said is they said, oh, we asked dad on his deathbed if you're still worried about the church. And he shook his head. Yeah. And the family kind of took that like, oh, well, we need to make sure that we're doing our job to make sure that the church is okay. And yet they didn't realize that they were driving the church into the ground because they wanted everything to be just like the way their dad did it. So the few pastors, and I knew at least one kid who his dad was a pastor of that church and got burned pretty bad by it. And it was like one of those things where, you know, if the pastor would have just did their job at the beginning and said, hey, you know what, I'm on my deathbed, I believe the church is going to be in good hands, not because I trust the people of the church that they're going to do a good job. Not only do I trust them, but also I know that Jesus is going to take care of his church. And if Jesus is going to take care of his church, and everybody, and I did everything I was a pastor to train people to make sure that they're following Jesus with all their hearts and they're doing their best to produce fruits of the Spirit and everything else, then I don't need to worry about it. And we're good.
How did you feel in that moment going into that? Oh, you're interviewing for that church and you're like, you saw all that. It was like, you're like, red flag.
Well, you know what? And this was my first ministry thing, so I probably wasn't really thinking red flag. In hindsight, I'm like, oh. And it was one of those things where I preached the next Sunday. I did my sermon. And then I got ghosted. Didn't hear back from them. And it wasn't until 2 months later, I got a phone call saying, hey, Mr. Pastor Stedman, we would like to have you come back to speak again. And it was at that point where even though I didn't have anything else on the docket, I didn't have anything, I hadn't really accepted a position yet, I just kind of said, well, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just not available now. And I just kind of left it at that. And I wasn't available now because I really didn't want to go there. And it wasn't until later I found out that the parsonage that the church had, that the widow of the pastor was still living in it and they weren't going to move mom out. So,
Oh, story's gone wild.
oh yeah. I thought we weren't doing Stories Gone Wild this episode,
You
but
snuck one in today.
I know. But here's the other thing, and here's the other thing. But at the same time, I also think the other thing is how, if you're a, and again, it goes back to the pastor and how are they leading people? And I'm going to share this story because this is a story I haven't shared in like a long time. But there's a person who is very influential in my ministry. And eventually, you know, I got word that something happened with this person and they were going to be leaving the church that I was working, that I was a part of, that I was working under with this individual. And again, I never really talked to this person because this person kind of, you know, blocked everybody, unfollowed everybody, unfriended like a majority of people. So it's like, okay, you know, I don't know why, because I never did anything. But I just kind of got unfriended. So I'm like, all right, okay. So just so I didn't really get to hear the source for the reasons why or what would happen. But apparently, from just a couple of people who I would deem as trustworthy, this pastor had an emotional affair. Nothing got physical, but there's just like a lot of strong feelings that were happening with this pastor and another pastor. The other pastor kind of felt convicted and felt like, you know, we need to come clean and I need to come clean. We need to come clean and talk about this. And again, nothing physical happened, nothing. This is all emotions. And of course, the lead felt like that wasn't a good idea. So because the other one wanted to come clean and the other one did not. The one who was in power, who had the most power, decided to make a motion to fire the pastor. And then the associate decided, wait a minute, you don't have the power, or according to our bylaws, you don't have the power authority to fire anybody without a thorough investigation on the reasons why. Well, he wasn't going to develop the reasons why. So that got a third pastor involved in this. So the third pastor started really figuring out what the heck is going on. And because of that, ended up finding out what happened. And it just became this lengthy process of denial, and the lead left to kind of go on like a little mini sabbatical to kind of figure stuff out, come back. And I tell the story because throughout the whole process, the main pastor in the story, who eventually ended up leaving, believed that if I would have just came clean and said something, my career was going to be over. Everything was going to be done. And yet, when I talk to other people, especially people who were part of the leadership at that time, they would have said, you know, if he would have came clean and said, hey, here's what's going on. It never got physical, it never got, but there's definitely some attraction that's happening. And like even if we're having staff meeting, you know, if so and so put their hand on my back, it meant a lot more than just a good pat on the back. Like there's really something going on here. The leadership of that church would have been very compassionate and would have said, okay, let's try to figure something out that is going to help benefit both of you. That's going to help, you know, figure out what's going on, because obviously there's some emptiness going on, which is why this is happening, you know. And they would have been, and frankly, if this person still wanted to serve as the pastor at that church, probably still would have been able to. If they would initially would have just came clean, especially right in those infancy stages, and said, hey, here's a struggle, here's what I'm dealing with, and I need help. And I think a testament to just not only the people, that congregation, but just the testament of the pastor. That was something that the pastor always proclaimed. And it was like one of those things where it's like, if you would have just trusted and believe that this congregation was the congregation that you have been leading to be more like Christ, to be loving and compassionate and humble and all these things, the story would have been different. But because you wanted to continue to deny and throw people under the bus and try to get other people fired and make life very miserable and start ousting other people in the who were in leadership, it kind of became nasty and it became very messy. And it was one of those things where it didn't have to be. Again, if someone's pride didn't get in the way, if someone truly believed that if what I'm doing has made a change and that my leadership team has changed and they're being more like Christ, like, I think it's okay for me to come out and say, hey, I'm struggling with an alcohol addiction. I'm struggling with a drug addiction. I feel like I'm starting to have feelings for another person on staff and I'm really struggling. I don't know what to do. And it's those type of things, which if a leadership board of a church is doing what they're supposed to do, then I think there's a lot of grace that can be given. And even if someone said, hey, I did this, you know, there's been times where I've known pastors who've gotten divorces and they thought their careers were going to be over. And yet the church was saying, hey, we're going to give you some time to go sabbatical. And at the end, they said, you know, we still want you as our pastor. Yeah, you went through a divorce. Yeah, we know what the Bible teaches about divorce, but we also know that there's grace and forgiveness. And we feel like that you've been doing a great job. And it's unfortunate that this marriage failed, but you have done everything you can to try to make the marriage work. It didn't. We still want you to be our pastor. And they kind of made that decision. And especially in that scenario, that pastor ended up still the pastor of the church that they're pastoring at in Northeast Ohio. So the thing is when it comes to bearing any type of secret sin, the best thing you could always do is come clean. I mean, come clean to your family. I mean, first, if you need to, come clean to your therapist, come find a therapist or a trusted pastor, come clean to them, everything else. But then I would say, come clean to your leadership at the church. And again, and if you're a pastor, you feel like you can't do that, then you really need to examine two things. A, am I too prideful and I need to humble myself? Or B, is the culture of this church not that healthy? And if it's not, then maybe you probably shouldn't be there, because maybe, I hate to say it, but maybe that might be the cause that's escalating your secret addiction, or why you're trying to hide everything, because you just don't trust the people that are on your leadership team. And you just feel like that if something were to happen, if I was just walking out of a bar because I was praying with somebody and I didn't have a drink, I walked down to church members and someone from leadership saw me, that I was going to get fired. Like, if you feel like that, humble yourself, make sure that it's not something in your head, or B, maybe it's not a safe place for you to do ministry and you need to move on. But that's kind of my two cents about that. So
rant over.
Yeah, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see what does come out. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if TD Jakes is found guilty of what's being printed. That's going to have a huge ripple effect on his ministry, the people that he has influenced and affected. But then the thing that really concerns me is that if TD Jakes was a part of this, how many more, like, big name pastors are we going to find from these lists that are out there of human trafficking, sexual exploitation and human trafficking? I mean, I remember pastoring in Youngstown when the whole Ashley Madison leak came out. And for those of you who are listening, you have no clue what Ashley Madison is. It was a site where you could go on there, set up a profile, and you could try to have affairs. You could set up to have affairs with people. And a leak came out, and some hackers who didn't really like the concept of Ashley Madison hacked the sites, pulled a bunch of names, put it out there on the internet, and people can look and find it. And there was a lot of pastors of small, medium-sized churches, even some larger churches that were on that list, and they resigned. I remember there was an article, I think from Christianity Today years ago. This would have been like 2010, 2011. But there was something where it was like, oh, if the Ashley Madison scan leaks came out on Thursday, then this Sunday would be Resignation Sunday, because there'd be a lot of person pastors who bought into this site, and they now have to resign because all that information's out there. And it was sad. And I think that's the thing, in the scriptures where it says anything that has been hidden will come to light. And I see that true. Like, even people who are in the most powerful positions, even though they may have more money, more resources, more something to kind of keep things hidden, eventually it's going to come to light. And when it does come to light, how great the fall from that mountaintop. So I think the best way is always to come clean. It's always, I would rather come clean and know that I did the right thing and just kind of put myself up on the mercy and grace of Jesus Christ and hopefully trust in, like, if I was doing the thing that I need to do as a pastor and did the thing that I need to do well, and I've taught people to be humble and grace and come clean immediately before anything seriously or darker took place, then I would hope that I would receive grace. And if not, then that's okay. At least I have received grace from God. And I can at least go saying, well, I no longer have to carry this burden, because carrying a sin and keeping it secret for so long is a heavy burden. I would not want to keep that heavy burden for so long, because you'd be lying and covering up your tracks and doing so much stuff to try to keep face, to keeping up appearances. And then when it finally does blow up, it's an explosion. So I don't know, but I better stop talk about this all day, and I don't really want to anymore. It's a very hard topic, and
It
it's a very
is.
hard topic. And if you're a pastor, if you're a minister out there, and maybe you're struggling with something, first of all, I would suggest go seek help. Find a trusted colleague, find a therapist, and talk about these things. And the next step, I'd say, talk to your family about it. If you're struggling with something, talk to your wife. If you're not married, talk to your girlfriend. If you're not seeing anybody, talk to your parents. Talk to your siblings about it. Have them support you, have them help you, and then go to your elder board, go to your leadership team, and tell them, like, hey, I'm struggling with this. And just be honest, and just lay your heart down and just be as honest as possible. And I think a lot of pastors, I think they'd be very surprised that if they came clean, that it probably will go a lot better than if they continue to hide it and it just kind of got found out or just kind of leaked.
I mean, I
Because at
agree.
least, I mean, at least in my experiences of people coming to me and telling me stuff, or even the struggles I've had, and I had to come clean and say, hey, I'm really struggling with this, it's always worked out good. I don't think I've ever had a bad experience when I've come clean about something that I may be struggling with, or even like if I'm saying, hey, I'm just not having my mental health is just out of whack. I really need to take time off to kind of get myself balanced, or I'm really going to have to take time to go see a counselor. And so I'm not going to be around in my office for these few hours because I really need to get help. Like, I think in some ways that's more honorable than me trying to hide it and continue to trudge through because, oh, I'm going to help build this church up and do this. Like, no, you're going to build the church up by making sure that you're healthy yourself and making sure that you're not having to carry a heavy burden yourself.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So, friends, that's going to be us for us today. Please make sure that you leave a comment if this is a podcast that you are interested in. And hey, if you're someone who you're struggling with something and you're like, oh, I really don't know who to talk to, you can shoot us an email at thescott7.com. We'd love to talk with you and try to help you and navigate you. Again, I've had, as a counselor, I've had experience of trying to help people in ministry. kind of navigate some of this stuff. And every time I've always encouraged them, you know, once you feel strong enough, I suggest you go tell somebody. And if you need me to be there, if you need me to encourage you, I will do that as I can. But I think that's going to be your best route to go. And I always encourage that. So, friends, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day. And we'll be back on with another episode. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Scott Simmons Podcast. The Scott Simmons Podcast is made possible by support from our listeners. We thank listeners like Patty and Scott, whose support goes to this podcast's continual growth and maintenance. If you want to support this podcast, you can do so in a number of ways. First, feel free to give us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode and share it with your friends. If you'd like to financially support the Scott Simmons Podcast, you can go to the website ko-fi.com/the-scott-simmons-podcast. That website again is ko-fi.com/the-scott-simmons-podcast. Thank you so much for listening.